tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. A U.S. senator's announcement that she will vote for the international agreement to restrict Iran's nuclear program gave President Barack Obama a major foreign policy victory Wednesday. Senator Barbara Mikulski of Maryland, a Democrat, was the 34th member of the Senate to pledge her support for the deal when it comes up for a vote in the U.S. Congress, enough to assure that Mr. Obama will prevail in the administration's effort to complete action on the landmark nuclear agreement. Secretary of State John Kerry told Congress in an impassioned speech Wednesday in Philadelphia,
"It is clear that if we reject this plan, the multilateral sanctions regime will start to unravel. The pressure on Iran will lessen, and our negotiating leverage will diminish, if not disappear."
Kerry told opponents to the agreement, JCOA is not based on trusting Iran, but on the international community's ability to police Iran's nuclear research and development work. At least 2,000 people are stranded at the main international train station in Budapest, Hungary, after authorities abruptly stopped allowing migrants to travel to Germany and Austria without a visa from the European Union. Hungary is one of the main migrant entry points to the European Union, with more than 156,000 arriving this year. The authorities there had begun Monday to allow migrants who had been camped outside for weeks to take the trains without being checked for a visa. But they apparently reversed their decision on Tuesday and halted the practice, stranding thousands of would-be travelers. Officials said they are trying to follow European Union rules. This is VOA News. No one has claimed responsibility, but after 18 Turkish construction workers were kidnapped in Baghdad, one analyst said the abduction is likely retaliation from Islamic State militants, angered by Turkey's efforts to defeat the group. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from Cairo.
Carnegie Europe scholar Mark Perini says Turkey is the only country that has successfully negotiated freedom for hostages after a mass kidnapping by the self-proclaimed Islamic State. Local reports on the 2014 Mosul abduction say Turkey released 180 IS members in exchange for its 46 nationals.
There was a big ratio. One Turkish hostage was worth several ISIS prisoners or ISIS sympathizers.
That release came less than a month after the U.S.-led coalition against the Islamic State began bombing the territories the militant group had taken over. Turkey did not participate. Turkey has since changed its stance and on Saturday announced it had begun airstrikes in Syria against the militants. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Cairo.
A former Congolese rebel leader known as the Terminator has pleaded not guilty to charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Bosco Ntaganda entered his plea Wednesday on the first day of his trial at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Prosecutors say Ntaganda is responsible for atrocities committed by his rebel group, the Union of Congolese Patriots, in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo in 2002 and 2003. He faces 13 counts of war crimes and 5 counts of crimes against humanity. U.S. President Barack Obama used the backdrop of a rapidly melting Alaskan glacier to highlight the effects of climate change as he continued his landmark visit to the far northwest state. "This is as good a signpost of what we are dealing with when it comes to climate change than anything," said Obama, standing in front of the exit glacier, which has receded 2 kilometers over the last 2 centuries. Thailand's military junta and police are speaking of significant progress in their investigation of last month's bombing of a Bangkok shrine, which left 20 people dead, wounding more than 120 others, many of them Asian visitors. The authorities are talking about a foreign man arrested at Thailand's border with Cambodia. The results from fingerprints analysis confirm that his fingerprints were on the bottle that contained explosives found inside an apartment raided last Saturday, said the National Police Lieutenant General on a broadcast by Thailand's military junta. "We confirmed that he is involved and might be the person who brought the bomb out of the room or brought it to the area of the Erawan Shrine on August 17th. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The United Nations Children's Fund says the number of women and children fleeing countries of violence heading for Europe has increased sharply in recent months. UNICEF says those arriving in the gateway country of the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia has tripled in the past 3 months.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, more than 300 illegal migrants, mostly Ethiopians, are detained in Malawi prisons after finishing their sentences. And the first ever World Hepatitis Summit opens in Glasgow, Scotland.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the United Nations Children's Fund says the number of women and children fleeing countries of violence heading for Europe has increased sharply in recent months. UNICEF says those arriving in the gateway country of the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia has tripled in the past 3 months. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund says some 3,000 people arrive in Macedonia every day. It says one-third of them are women and children. Most are refugees fleeing war and persecution in their countries of origin. 80% are from Syria and 10% from Afghanistan and Iraq. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillirac tells VOA many families, including many children, have been on the move for weeks, even months, enduring searing heat and other enormous hardships. He says many arrive at the Macedonian border with only the clothes on their backs. All are physically exhausted.
They are suffering dehydration, blisters, cold, diarrhea, and sunburn. 12% of women arriving are pregnant, and we got many stories of women starting bleeding and losing their child, for instance, in Greece.
Bouillirac says UNICEF is particularly concerned about the well-being of the children.
Those who left Syria, for instance, just went through very difficult time, but the children don't speak, and it's not a good sign, you know. It shows a kind of trauma, and some of them are clearly psychosocially and psychologically traumatized.
The refugees do not stay long in Macedonia. They are just transiting through the country on their way to the European Union, where they hope to find refuge. Nevertheless, Bouillirac says UNICEF is intent on easing their condition while they are in the country, and particularly to bring a bit of joy into the hearts of the children.
That's why we have this child-friendly space, which allows them to play and to be a bit more, you know, to feel more at ease and change of world for a few hours, because they don't stay too long at that border.
Since UNICEF set up the first child-friendly spaces on August 23rd, it has received around 1,200 children. Bouillirac says the need is so huge, the agency is planning to set up more play stations to accommodate ever more children who arrive in a state of distress. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Europe is facing mounting criticism over how it's handling its biggest migration crisis since World War II. But not all Europeans believe building walls or passing repressive policies are the answer. From the French port city of Calais, Lisa Bryant reports on one migrant school that is opening doors and building bonds across nationalities.
The weather.
French lessons at the Chemin des Dunes school. These students are learning terms for the weather, rain, wind, and snow, which many of these Sudanese and Eritreans will soon be seeing for the first time.
Le temps. Le temps.
They're here to study art, Tai Chi, and especially French and English, languages that can help them apply for legal status in France or in Britain, just across the English Channel. Nigerian migrant Simeko Jones, who founded the school, says it's also bringing together Calais' diverse migrant community.
Maybe you saw this Kosovar. He come to school. He see nine blacks, you know, from Sudan, sometimes Afghan, two Afghan, three Afghan. But for me, it's a pleasure for me to see them live together, you know, sit down together, unite together.
La pluie, la neige.
La neige.
The school opened in July in this Calais migrant camp that's known as the jungle. Today, classes are spilling over.
Le nu.
Wasim Mohammed from Pakistan arrived in Calais 6 weeks ago. He's hoping to find work in France. Migrants at the jungle told him about the school.
They told me that if you learn the French language, there is a school in jungle. Is it free of charge? So that's why I decided to come to get the French lesson here today.
The school has a growing roster of volunteer teachers, like speech therapist Virginie Thiberguin, who lives in the area. Some Calais residents have staged protests against the migrants, but others, like Thiberguin, want to help them.
I often see people on the road, and so I wanted to meet them, to know the way they were living here. The school is a way to restore humanity, and so it's a good thing.
The children. Yeah.
Volunteers are also coming from Britain. Science teacher Neith McMahon from Kent crossed the channel by ferry with food, clothes, and school supplies for the migrants. She heard about the school on Facebook.
I just felt really emotional about what's going on here, how these people are being treated. You know, they're desperate, they're running away from war and torture and suffering, and a lot of cases is caused by Western policies. So I wanted to do what I could.
Founder Zimiko Jones wants to establish another classroom just for women and children. The school is proof, he says, that migrants can create something positive in the jungle of Calais, and that Europe and its migrants can build a future together. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Calais, France.
Thousands of migrants continue to confound European transit systems. This is more people from the Middle East and Africa seek refuge among the member states of the European Union. Dozens of Hungarian police are blocking the gates of Budapest-Keleti railway station today as hundreds of migrants surround the station chanting freedom. An estimated 3,000 are camped nearby. Hungarian officials refused for a second day to let migrants board trains to Austria or Germany. On Monday, more than 3,000 boarded trains for Vienna. Flows have fallen, with Germany reporting only 50 migrant arrivals in Munich today, compared with 2,400 on Tuesday. Germany continues to accept large numbers of Syrian migrants and expects to receive more than 800,000 by the end of the year.
Hungarian government officials say they have decided to comply with EU rules requiring proper documents to cross borders. They are considering deployment of 3,500 troops to reinforce barbed wire fences being erected at the Serbian border. Hundreds of rail passengers on 5 Eurostar trains between London and Paris were delayed for several hours last night. They waited without electricity or air conditioning at the entry to the tunnel beneath the English Channel. Meanwhile, authorities investigated possible damage to trains and reports of migrants blocking the tracks in the tunnel ahead. The International Organization for Migration says more than 350,000 migrants have landed on the European continent this year.
Early flows across the Mediterranean to Italy have been eclipsed by new flows from Turkey bound for the Balkans. Turkish media reported that 11 migrants in 2 small boats drowned as they tried to cross the Aegean Sea to the Greek island of Kos. In the last 24 hours, the Greek Coast Guard rescued more than 1,000 migrants from 28 vessels in the Aegean. Authorities have also arrested 6 suspected smugglers. In the Mediterranean, a Norwegian vessel rescued 800 from a vessel in distress and delivered them to the port of Cagliari on Sardinia. Although not a member of the EU, Iceland is also willing to take in migrants. When the government in Reykjavik has offered to take 50 migrants, citizens offered to take even more into their homes and suggested additional housing at an abandoned military base.
More than 300 illegal migrants, mostly Ethiopians, are detained in Malawi prisons after finishing their sentences. Government officials say the prolonged stay provides a place to live while readying for deportation. But rights groups say keeping people in prison after their term is finished is illegal. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi immigration authorities say these people were convicted of illegal entry into Malawi. They came through Tanzania on their way to South Africa. Department of Immigration spokesperson Joseph Jawa describes those being held.
We have 358 countrywide, that is. And in Blantyre here, we have 7. In Deza, we have 32. In Nkisi, we have 64. And in Lilongwe, we have 255. Most of these are Ethiopians and the Congolese.
Chawa said many are just waiting to be sent back home. But prisoners' rights activist Victor Muhango condemns this.
That's illegal. They are actually breaking the law. They are keeping people, innocent people, in prison illegally. The law says you cannot keep somebody in prison after completing their sentences. And after all, you know our prisons are full and they are subject to cruel punishment after completing their sentences.
Malawi Chief Commissioner for Prisons, Kennedy Nkuma, told VOA the released migrants are being kept in prisons out of goodwill.
They are actually now housed because the Constitution of the Republic of Malawi allows to house them, rehabilitate them. So what we are now doing is to house them before they are repatriated to their respective country. They do not wait, they just wake up in the morning and wait the time to be deported.
But Muhango is not convinced.
Is that the home or a prison? How come someone is provided a shelter in prison? Why not finding a better place to provide a shelter?
Doctors Without Borders deputy head of mission in Malawi, Nicolette Jackson, says her team has been providing medical help in clinics of two major Malawi prisons.
We see that many of them are malnourished. They don't eat the food. They don't like the food that is provided in prison, which is inadequate anyway. They get one meal a day, and it's enzema. It has no protein. So we see some of the Ethiopians suffering from a protein deficiency.
Jackson said some Ethiopians have been waiting 9 months for repatriation. Nkoma says the prolonged migrant prison stay is equally concerning to Malawi government authorities.
We are spending too much for these people when we are not supposed to spend. And the government has to hire a plan to take these people to Ethiopia. So that again is an expense of government.
Immigration spokesperson Chawa said he could not tell when the migrants will be flown back to their respective countries. He told VOA his department has no funds for such action. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yahis Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The United Nations Children's Fund says a number of women and children fleeing countries of violence heading for Europe has increased sharply. And more than 300 illegal migrants, mostly Ethiopians, are detained in Malawi prisons after finishing their sentences. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
The first ever World Hepatitis Summit is being held in Glasgow, Scotland this week. It's estimated 400 million people are infected with the viral disease, which kills nearly 1.5 million people a year. But a vaccine and treatment are now available. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The World Health Organization says most people living with the chronic disease do not even know they're infected. There are five different hepatitis viruses. A, B, C, D, and E all cause inflammation of the liver. But two strains, B and C, cause most of the deaths. In fact, those two strains are responsible for 80% of all liver cancer deaths. The A and E strains are spread through contaminated food and water. They cause acute infection, However, most people recover. Dr. Stefan Victor says the B and C strains are different.
Hepatitis B and C are transmitted by blood, so that means from mother to a child, through blood transfusions or through injections. Hepatitis B can also be transmitted by sex, so there's different routes of transmission.
Victor is team leader of the World Health Organization's Global Hepatitis Program.
Luckily, we have ways to prevent all of them. There's a great vaccine for hepatitis B that is effective for life, and there's treatments for both B and C. So there are now in hand means of preventing and treating both infections. So really, this is a time to act, and that's really the point of this summit.
Hepatitis D is also transmitted through contaminated blood. However, it only affects people already infected with the B virus. Not long ago, no treatment was available for hepatitis C to prevent fatal liver damage.
One of the most remarkable advances in the development of medicines is the development of treatments for hepatitis C. Until recently, it was very difficult to cure. It required weekly injections, and only half of people who started the medicines were cured. Now, the medicines are about 12 weeks of treatment, one pill a day, and almost everyone is cured. And cured means that the virus is gone from their body.
But Dr. Victor says although a vaccine and treatments are available, not everyone in need can get them.
The problem has been that these medicines are very expensive. In the U.S., for example, it costs more than $100,000 to treat one person just for the medicines. Luckily, the lower-income countries have been able to get these same medicines at much lower price. But a lot more has to happen to make these drugs affordable. And we estimate that it's a big problem. There's about 240 million people with chronic hepatitis B, and between 130 and 150 million for hepatitis C. So these are big problems.
One of the goals of the first World Hepatitis Summit is to urge countries to develop national hepatitis treatment and prevention programs.
We really need governments, civil society, private companies to make people aware.
He says the approach should be similar to that taken for HIV/AIDS. He says some routes of transmission are similar. And like HIV, hepatitis also carries a lot of stigma. Another similarity is that hepatitis, if untreated, does not kill right away. It can take decades for the virus to destroy the liver. The worst affected regions are in Asia and sub-Saharan Africa. The World Hepatitis Summit is co-sponsored by the WHO and the World Hepatitis Alliance. It's expected to become an annual event. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In South Sudan and Sudan, orphan girls and boys are not likely to learn to read and write, but that's changing thanks to an organization that specializes in educating them. Makeway Partners describes itself as the only indigenously operated relief organization in the region, helping vulnerable orphans and former slaves. So far, they're teaching more than 1,500 girls and boys. Kimberly Smith is president and co-founder of Makeway Partners. She spoke with me about their schools in South Sudan.
We actually have three schools, two in South Sudan, one near the border of Darfur, and one down near the border of Uganda. They're about 1,000 miles apart. And then the third one is just across the north border in North Sudan of the Nuba Mountains. I'm excited to see what's happening in all of them, of course, in a country where education is so scant, and a 13-year-old girl has a higher likelihood of dying in childbirth than she does learning to read or write, become literate at all. And so I'm just so proud that we now have the first high school in the entire area where we are there near Darfur. We have 750 students, and a little more than half of them are girls who every day study English, Dinka, which is their mother tongue, Kiswahili, so that they can be effective throughout this portion of Africa, but also Arabic.
What age ranges are the students in?
No one really knows their exact age, and so it's difficult to say. We tend to assess children by their physical development, so of course there is a lot of margin for error there. But in the high school, our average girl will be between the ages of 12 and 20.
Are the high schools, are they a four-year high school?
Yes, 4 years.
What happens to the girls when they leave? Where do they go?
We haven't had that yet. We started in this particular region. We started just over 10 years ago, and we started with the first grade. We just did open enrollment, letting any child that first come, first serve, we did open enrollment, took in 153 students. And when some of those were able the very next year to move on to the second grade, and so we started as a second grade. The next year we opened the third grade and so forth. And so this year we now have 11th graders, what we would call 11th graders, in our high school. And next year will be our first graduating class. And so we are extremely excited about that opportunity. Our goal will be to scholarship. There will be about 25 young men and women who, for the first time in this entire region, will be graduating high school, receive a diploma from high school. So it is definitely a big deal. And we will scholarship these children to neighboring countries, Uganda or Kenya, not here in the U.S., but neighboring African countries, where they can stay as close to their culture as possible, and they will be signing contracts to come back into the country and help serve within their country. The point is for internal change, but those contracts are really a small thing in that this is hunger and desire. They have been raised in this, and they see the difference between what life for them is and life for their siblings, for example, who didn't make it into the orphanage, or life just out in the community in general.
You brought up the high number of females in the high school,
yes,
which is really great to see. So how does this affect girls who sometimes don't get that opportunity to go to school?
One of the ways in which I see that it has affected them is the cultural pressure from outside is so huge that literally tells these girls that by the time you're menstruating, it is your duty to repopulate our country. But we'll have extended family members, uncles. We had one girl in particular who, when she was about 12 years old, uncle kidnapped her and tied her in his tukul, his little mud house, for 3 days, telling her it was her obligation to start having babies and could not be free and go back to school. We looked for her, could not find her. It took 3 days for her to get free and come back to us and tell us what had happened. Of course, we have been able to keep her. That young girl is now in our graduating class that will graduate next year. And so we see she was willing to stand up for the right to become literate, the right to do something special in her life. So she's planning on going on to medical school after graduation.
That was Kimberly Smith, president and co-founder of Make Way Partners. She was speaking with me from Rapid City, South Dakota.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, has been passed, signed, and reauthorized for the next decade, ensuring U.S. African trade and investment will continue to flourish. Next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa, host Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss the outcome of the AGOA joint conference held in Gabon. That's next time on VOA Africa. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share the ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.